Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello everyone, and thank you once again for listening to the Saga of World War II, A Casus Belli Project. My guest today is David Milne, Senior Designer at Relic Entertainment for single-player mission content. Today we'll be talking about the recent release of Company of Heroes 3, published by Sega and developed by Relic Entertainment. Company of Heroes 3 is the third installment in the Company of Heroes franchise, a World War II real-time strategy game that puts you in command of a company of soldiers in some of the most famous battles of the Second World War. Company of Heroes 3 focuses on the Italian and North African campaigns, and builds on previous iterations of the game by adding a campaign mode in addition to the standard tactical RTS battles. If you are anything like me and enjoy gaming almost as much as you do history, I think you'll really appreciate our discussion. If you are interested in purchasing the game for the PC, you can find it on Steam or follow the links from the Casus Belli website at casusbellipodcast.com/World War II with the number 2. Just find the blog post for Appendix I, Part 1. After you've listened to the interview, I've also prepared an accompanying biography of Tom Derrick, VC, in Appendix I, Part 2. Anyway, let's begin the interview. My guest today is David Milne. He's a senior designer at Relic Entertainment and was on the development team for Company of Heroes 3. David, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, so to get started, can you just give me your 30-second elevator for pitch for what Company of Heroes is and what the game is about?
Yeah, absolutely. So Company of Heroes 3 is the third installment in an RTS franchise about World War II. So this game takes place in the Mediterranean theater. So we have one campaign that focuses on the Deutsches Afrika Korps fighting their way through North Africa, and then our bigger campaign is based on the Allies starting, you know, in the toe, I guess you could say, of Italy, and working their way up to Rome.
Sounds great. So I guess before we really get into what the game's about, can you tell me what your role is at Relic and what part you played in actually developing the game?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a mission designer. So what I work on specifically is the single-player mission content, or the levels in the game. That means working on the paper plans, the layouts, the scripting, basically creating the mission from conception all the way to the final thing that you end up seeing in the game, which itself involves a lot of historical research, looking at layouts, trying to find ways to, you know, accurately represent the history of these battles in the missions themselves.
Yeah, so actually, I understand you have a history degree. How did that?
I do.
How did you take that and parlay it into being a developer at a game studio?
It certainly helps with the research process and you know, being able to practice that discipline, which admittedly I haven't for a long time. You know, I've been in the games industry for a while, and so the history degree is a little bit old at this point, but those research skills definitely came in handy and came back to me a little bit while I was working on this project. I've always had a fascination with history and an interest in history. It's gone back and forth, honestly. When I was younger, I think it was games like Company of Heroes 1 or Age of Empires, even Assassin's Creed, that, you know, got me interested in history and sort of directed me into getting that degree when I went to school. But then it kind of went the other way, and I went to a game design school after that and got into the games industry, and now here I am doing history and video games all at the same time. So it's all my interests are kind of coinciding on this project right now.
That's awesome. And based on the games you listed, like Age of Empires and Assassin's Creed, we were probably growing up in the same gaming environment. But yeah. I guess how so having that history degree, how does that
influenced the design philosophy going into creating the third installment of Company of Heroes? And how do you go about representing that time period and those sorts of campaigns that you depict in the game?
Absolutely. So one of the things that we really try to focus on early is, I mean, one, picking battles that we feel are, you know, kind of unique and interesting. And so one of the things that we focus on early is, like you said, that history and trying to dive into the events as they happened. And one of the challenges we have is how to represent that history in the game or in the mission. For example, you know, a lot of our missions are on average 45 minutes to an hour long. Basically, every single one of these battles lasted longer than 45 minutes. So a lot of what we have to do is find, look into the history of the battle and pick out the things that kind of define it almost. And what are the essentials of this battle and work on representing that in the mission.
Okay, yeah. So I think you're kind of leading into another question I had, which was, so the two campaigns that you focus on in the game are the North Africa campaign and the Italian campaign, which, from my perspective, we've covered both of those campaigns in the show already for the most part. And the North African campaign is defined by it's very armor-heavy, lots of big tank flanking maneuvers and endless desert, whereas the Italian campaign is a much more claustrophobic campaign. It's hills, it's little ravines, there's nowhere to maneuver tanks, you know. It's very infantry and artillery focused. So how is that, was that a deliberate choice to have like these very geographically co-located almost, but conceptually very different types of campaigns?
So that was something that we actually asked our players about a long, long time ago. You know, what would they like to see after Company of Heroes 2? And we kind of polled them, and the Mediterranean theater is what they landed on. And one of the reasons why we wanted to do both campaigns, you know, in North Africa and Italy rather than one is, first, like you say, they do provide different gameplay opportunities, both narratively and gameplay-wise. The North African campaign, if you play our missions, they are typically very heavy. The Deutsche Afrika Korps, as we represented in the game, has tons of early tanks, lots of light vehicles. They're very fast. They're very mobile. They can use half-tracks to tow weapons, so they're able to really move around a lot. And then we have maps that sort of match that. So maps like Gazala, and we have battles at Tobruk and El Alamein, you know, as maps, they are these open deserts that are broken up by some geographic formations, but honestly are more broken up by British trench lines than they are by anything natural. And so it's about being able to maneuver, find angles of attack on these defenses and battle your way through that way. And then, as you say, in the Italian campaign, in the Italian maps, there are a lot more hills and ravines, and it is a bit more closer combat in some cases, and rivers, like lots of choke points around bridgeheads and things that you need to battle through. And so we have a new mechanic that is our height gameplay. So height actually gives you an advantage in this game in a way that it didn't in previous games. You know, units that are in cover will lose their cover bonus if an enemy is attacking them from above effectively. And so controlling high ground becomes a real important thing in these missions.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, and that's, you know, Company of Heroes has always been sort of about that very granular tactical level of using cover and moving around. So you're, I guess, adding a third dimension of not only breadth and width, but also height to the battlefield. So I guess my next question would be, in creating these missions, you know, whether it's in the North African campaign or in the Italian theater, what is your philosophy going into it, and then what research goes into creating that? So, you know, you've got to create unit models, you've got to actually do the individual level design, you might call it, but then also Company of Heroes 3 adds another campaign layer on top of the classic RTS layer. So I guess what from the very low level nuts and bolts, what people sometimes call rivet counting, up to the grand, almost grand strategy layer, how do you approach that would be my question.
How we approach that.
It might be a very broad question. Yeah.
It is. But honestly, it ends up being kind of the same way at every level, which is that we're doing that historical research in terms of the units themselves. It's a lot of imagery, a lot of visual research, right, to make sure that we're recreating those units as accurately as possible. If you look at the reference folders that the artists have, it's just full of images from the time. And then they take that and use that to create, we have concept artists that take all that information and try to create a single cohesive unit or representation of that unit before they go in and build that in the game. When it comes to then, I guess, the missions, I kind of touched on this before, but it's about taking that historical research, which includes books, documentaries. There's a period of time where my job was just watching documentaries. It was wonderful. Even finding things like aerial photography to look at the layouts of these areas and really make sure that we're trying to represent the layout in an accurate way. And then you take what happened and you try to boil it down into just, I think I was saying this before, but the essentials. Like, what are the kind of top three points that represent this battle? Because, for instance, there is the Battle of Anzio in our game, like the invasion that the Allies were involved with there. And I mean, that was a conflict that lasted months. It was January to like May or something like that, I think, off the top of my head. But we have to represent that in 45 minutes to an hour. So what are the kind of the, to me, what we're doing is, okay, what are the things that make you think of Anzio? What are the things we can have in that 45-minute mission where you'll say, ah, yes, I recognize this as Anzio? So one of the first things you do in the mission is you're on the beach and you are having to defend it. You're trying to defend this beachhead while being hit by artillery, because that was a big part of that, this siege mentality of being stuck in this on this beachhead and not being able to break out and having to just take, days and weeks of artillery strikes. And then eventually, once you kind of get through that, including a railway gun that we refer to as Anzio Annie, kind of like the Allies did, and then you break through those lines and actually break out, and it turns into a bit more of a running battle. And so even though the moment-to-moment gameplay isn't going to be the exact, moment-to-moment history that happened, it is an accurate representation of, I guess, the 45-minute version of the Battle of Anzio. And so that's kind of how we try to approach that. And then on the grand strategy layer, the layer that connects those missions together, that is where it can get a little bit more ahistorical, because we give the player a lot of choice and a lot of agency. And so we set up the map to be as authentic as we can. We have the defensive line, the Volturno line, and the winter line, and we have the missions located at historically accurate locations. And we try to have that be accurate. But once the player gets there, they make the choice of where they attack, with what companies they attack. So they have a choice of British companies, and they can use British units, they can use American units, and within both of those factions there are, the Americans have an armored company and a special forces company and a paratrooper company. So there's a battle at Ortona, but the player has the choice of taking Ortona with an American paratrooper company, right? So you, because we give the player that agency, there is certainly ahistorical things that can happen, but the way that that campaign layer plays out is it's more of a, it's kind of playing on that wargaming idea of what if, Like, what if I was the commander? What if I was here? Here's the scenario. Now you make the choices and you see how you do and where you end up going with it. So the player could play it out, you know, fairly historically accurately if they choose to. But it's up to them to see how they want to play that out.
Yeah, and that's a new aspect to the Company Heroes franchise. It's not just the RTS battles, but also the campaign map, which I'm sure a lot of my listeners are familiar with, the sort of the other side of video wargaming, I guess you could call it, of the grand strategy games, where you get the scenario, but then it's kind of up to you to drive the history. But but you also mentioned so it's called Company of Heroes because the game is sort of built around the idea that you've got these companies that, you know, and you mentioned it, I think you can play with, you know, there's the British, the Americans, the Germans, and each have different types of companies. Like the Indian Army is represented, and they all have different strengths or weaknesses or things they're kind of built to work toward. I guess, could you expand on that a little bit, how the building the companies is an aspect of gameplay?
Yeah, absolutely. So each faction, so there's four factions that we've launched with. There's the American force, the U.S. forces, the Commonwealth, so British Commonwealth, the North African, so Deutsches Afrika Korps, and then the Wehrmacht. So there's kind of two German factions. One is the Wehrmacht in Italy, and one is the North Africa Corps. So each of those factions has a base faction, something that no matter what, they always have access to. So for the Americans, for instance, you can build riflemen. Your basic squad is the rifleman squad that you can upgrade with BARs, and they have grenades, and they're sort of your mainline infantry unit. And you can build mortar squads and heavy machine gun squad and Hellcats and Shermans, you know. So you have kind of these base factions, and same with all the other ones. The British have Tommies and infantry sections, and HMG sections, and are able to build Grant tanks and Matildas and that sort of a thing. So they all have this base faction that they can work with. But then on top of that, you can modify that faction by choosing a specific thing to specialize in, and that's what the company is. So for the British, one of the companies that we have is the Indian Artillery Company. So you have all those base units, but then you can also bring in, instead of bringing in the regular 2-inch mortar, you can bring in the heavy 4.2-inch mortar, and it gives your sappers the ability to build a BL 5.5 artillery emplacement, so a big giant artillery piece, as well as call in the Gurkhas, who are a kind of heavy assault infantry unit. They're all equipped with Thompsons, and they have assault grenades and smoke grenades, and so they're very good at getting in close and assaulting. And so it gives you a lot of utility and kind of changes the way that you play by how you add on to that base faction. That's actually how we're adding a lot of our Italian units as well to the DAC. So two of the battle groups, or two of the companies, for the DAC are focused on the Italians. You gain the ability to call in the Bersaglieri Italian infantry, and call in Italian tanks like the Semovente, and so that's how you're adding to and kind of augmenting that base faction, is by adding these companies.
So you're able to customize, I guess you could say, the type of company you want to bring into the individual RTS layer, and then I assume that the type of battle you expect to get into, whether that's a very claustrophobic, tight in the Italian hills, or something more open in North Africa, influences if you think you're going to do a lot of if you have a lot of ground to cover, I guess you could say, in the desert, you might want some tanks. If you're going to be assaulting a fortified position, something like Monte Cassino or something, you're going to want a lot of artillery or a lot of indirect fire support, I guess you could say, to reduce that position and assault it with light infantry.
Yeah, exactly. And that's how it works in single player. In multiplayer, we have those companies as well. And so one of the things that you do with them in that case is you can make the choice in the match itself. So you go in with the faction, then once the game has started and you're playing against each other, that's when you make the choice of what company you're going to be. So you can kind of do that in two ways. You can either have a plan in mind already, and you choose your company almost immediately, and you start working up to unlocking those extra things. Or you could wait to see what your enemy or your opponent chooses and see if you can choose a company that maybe gives you an edge against them.
Okay.
So there's kind of a picking, counter-picking aspect to the companies as well when it comes into the multiplayer faction.
Yeah.
Or aspect of it.
So something else I wanted to get into, not necessarily completely focused at the historical aspect, but more just the game design aspect, is I think there's a couple different philosophies maybe in game design of how you make a game interesting. Typically, it's either you're playing a game because you want to create a story, right, to generate a narrative, or I guess you could say it's to present the player with interesting choices. And in the case of a historical game, just a sandbox, people who are interested in, you know, these campaigns are really into the Deutsches Afrika Korps, just want to play with the pieces, like, you know, in the toy box. How do you, as a developer, have an opinion on that, or kind of obviously with campaign mode, you're literally telling a story, but also in each individual RTS battle, you are also, there's can be an emergent narrative there where the player, as they go through, ends up telling themselves a story. Like I said, what do you, as a game developer, have, or designer, have ideas or opinions on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that we try to balance, and we're always, because we have a story to tell, and certainly in each of these, both on the, you know, the grand strategy layer, and then in the mission itself, there is a narrative, there is a story that's being told. But we don't want to limit the player either, you know, into, okay, you have to follow my exact narrative beats. We want the player to be able to kind of discover that themselves and have agency in the choices that they make. So at the grand strategy layer, there is a lot of choice. And not only that, there are many storylines on that campaign map, which the player may or may not end up engaging or encountering based on the choices that they make. So you could play through our campaign twice and have different sets of narratives kind of come up for you based on the choices that you make and where you go. And so there is always narrative, and there's always going to be story there, but we leave it up to the player on how and when they engage with that story. And the choice itself becomes really relevant because there are characters on this campaign map. There's a British general and an American general, and then a Italian partisan contact. And the decisions that you make on that campaign map will sort of gain you or lose you support from those characters based on the choices you make. For instance, one of the things that you can do on the campaign map at the grand strategy layer, you have airfields and you can build bombers and you have seaports and you can call in battleships and destroyers, and something that you can do with those to make it easier to capture cities or to help defeat enemy companies that are on the map is you can do bombing runs and ship-based bombardments on coastal cities. The American general is into that because he just wants to get to Rome very quickly. He want, you know, let's blast through. We gotta fight our way up here. Yeah. However, the partisan contact, kind of understandably, doesn't like the idea that you're destroying every Italian city that you come up to. And so there is a balance and there is a choice here in how you want to play through that campaign. And based on those choices, you'll end up getting kind of different narratives. The narrative in the missions themselves is a little bit more set. There's just not the time to really have a branching narrative, you know, in the single mission. But even then, we usually leave it somewhat open. Certainly there are things happening. But like I said, when it comes to these missions, when we built the missions, we don't know from the beginning who the player is going to come in as, either in as Americans or as the British, and we don't know what faction they're going to be. So when we design those missions, we design it to be very open in the sense that you can be any of the factions, you can be any of the companies. Basically, you can have any tool set, and we give more objectives in terms of like high-level directives, right? Secure the intersection, capture the courtyard, destroy, you know, the emplacements, or break through the defensive line or something like that. And then the way that the player does that is entirely up to them. You know, if there's a, if you need to secure the intersection, there's an HMG garrisoned in a building covering that intersection, which is a situation you'll find yourself in a lot in Ortona. Whether you use mortars to destroy the building, or you call in an airstrike, or you use units that have smoke grenades and you pop smoke so that you can close in very close and actually breach into the garrison. That's actually another new mechanic we have. Infantry can kick open the door and throw a grenade inside to force an enemy out of a building. You know, however you decide to solve that problem is really up to you. And we're given kind of those just high level, you know, directives. Yeah. And it's up to you to solve that sort of combat puzzle, I guess.
Yeah. And so you speaking to that breaching just now actually touched on something else that I just remembered about. So the in discussions I've heard about the game and my understanding of the game is that, like you said, that breaching aspect where, but it's not just, you know, having some guys run up and throw a grenade, right? It's also, you want, there's smoke, so you're going to want to use smoke to obscure the position. And it got me thinking, so part of my background is I'm actually in the Army National Guard in the U.S. I'm an infantry officer. I've been to the Maneuver Captain's Career Course, and, you know, I feel like I know these things to a certain degree. And but what you did is, it sounds like you replicated what's called SOSRA, so suppress, obscure, secure, reduce, and assault are the steps you do in a combined arms breach. And it sounds like that has effectively, intentionally or not, been replicated in the game. Is that something that you deliberately tried to do, or is that just sort of an emergent property in the game?
The honest answer is probably a little bit of both. But I mean, certainly there are, like right from Company of Heroes 1, there are aspects of, you know, the effect that weapons have that we're trying to replicate, right? So the idea of line of sight and incomplete information, right? That's our fog of war system. You know, you can't see the whole map at any given time. There is, you know, your units can only see what they can see. And so things like flares to illuminate areas or smoke to block line of sight, like that's a very important aspect. The idea that heavy machine gun teams or machine gun sections can suppress enemy infantry rather than just having a bigger gun that is more killy. You know, it has an effect that actually changes the dynamics of how an enemy interacts. And when an enemy is suppressed, their range that they can fire is a lot shorter. They actually lay down and they can become not just suppressed in terms of having their combat effectiveness reduced, but they can become pinned in the sense that they can't do anything now and you have to retreat them. So there's definitely something that we're trying to replicate in this game of the idea that winning an engagement doesn't mean killing everybody. It's about maneuvering and suppressing an enemy, closing into by either smoke grenades or by flanking. And then kind of overwhelming an enemy to either eliminate them or force them to retreat is absolutely something that we try to replicate, because it's those kinds of small arms tactics that are interesting, that are something that is, you know, really, really flexing the strategic mind when you're trying to play the game. And that's where a lot of that fun comes from. I mentioned Ortona briefly, and I found a, We do that both in terms of like the tools that the player has access to, but also in terms of the challenges that we set the player up against. So for example, in Ortona, I found this really good description of exactly how the Germans would defend an intersection in Ortona, how they would set up their machine guns and where they would hide their anti-tank guns and kind of at what angle they would do it and how they would destroy certain aspects of the buildings to block one way so that there you were funneling things through a certain direction. And I effectively just recreated that in the mission. So when you're fighting in Ortona, you are trying to solve the same problem that the Allies were trying to solve when they were moving through Ortona. And in a lot of ways, you have the same tools. And so we do our best to try to represent those small engagements as closely as we can, because it's an interesting problem to need to solve.
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, when I go into these sorts of games, that's kind of what I'm playing them for. I've obviously have read a great deal about these historical engagements, these problems, and I want to say, hey, well, if I were in those shoes, how would I have done it? Or at least get something that feels like a closer experience to what their experience was. I do kind of want to shift gears here for a second. We've been talking very much about this game itself, and I kind of want to go back to the, I guess, more general game design philosophy, I guess you could say, in that. Because so Company of Heroes is obviously in the real-time strategy RTS space, and specifically the World War II RTS space, which is a little bit of a crowded field, I guess you could say. You know, there's Men of War, there's Steel Division, just to name two. What do you think sets Company of Heroes apart from them, and or maybe sets it above its competitors?
So one thing that sets it apart, I think I'm probably more familiar with Steel Division than Men of War. I haven't played that one much. Steel Division is definitely trying to, I mean, I don't want to speak for them, but what it looks like is it's trying to represent a bit more of a, I would say, a simulation. You know, when you think about the ranges in Steel Division, the ranges are huge, and you're definitely operating more on a definitely higher than company level, really, when you're playing those games, and units are moving. I suppose they're not moving actually any slower, but the spaces are so much larger that they kind of, the decisions that you're making these decisions, and you're kind of watching them play out in real time. And some of what you're doing is you're kind of nudging things in the right direction. So it's kind of a level up, I would say, in terms of like the command and control aspect from Company of Heroes. I think, and I've seen some other games that I feel are kind of in this similar zone is that. Something I think that Company of Heroes does really well is that it is a little bit closer to the ground. You're more minutely controlling your units. You know, you're not going to end up with controlling, you know, hundreds of units at any given time. On average, you can have like a full army would be 5 to 7 infantry, a couple of weapons teams, you know, an HMG or an AT gun, and then, you know, 3 or 4 tanks, that kind of a thing. That's kind of the level that you're operating at. And it's that sort of small scale infantry tactics that you're controlling that I think kind of draws you in a little bit. You get so much character from the infantry, right? You're hearing them talk, and we do write full biographies for all of our characters and voice act them, and you can hear their stories if you know.
Okay,
you stop and listen to them, if you kind of listen to all of their voice lines, you get a sense of the personality of this person, and they have a character bio written for them, and so that we kind of know who they are. And I think that that's one of the things that we really try to do in our game, is we try to pull you into that personality, into the making you care about these units. We do that both, like I said, kind of narratively, in the sense that they have character and they have personality, and, you know, you hear them triumph when they win a fight, and you hear them get scared or just swear a lot, you know, when artillery hits nearby or something like that. And we do it mechanically as well. You can retreat your units out of battle. There's an aspect of unit preservation that we have in our game that we do, because we want you to feel attached to these units. You need to feel bad when you lose a squad or get a squad wipe, which is a big deal to completely lose a squad. So I would say that there, in some ways, when you think back to Company of Heroes 1, it's very much taking a lot of its tone from things like Saving Private Ryan and Band of Brothers. And it's that aspect that we're trying to make sure that we replicate in this. Is it's not just about war games, it's about the people who are fighting the war, and trying to bring that sense of humanity, I guess, to these units that you're engaging with and to these battles that you're fighting. So in some ways that means there are cases where we stray a little bit away from simulation. Like certainly when you think about how artillery is represented in our game, you know, if you build an artillery piece and you can hit something, you know, almost on the other side of the map, I think if you actually measure that, it's probably like 500 meters or something like that, which would be an incredibly short range yeah. artillery strike. But, you know, when it comes to that scale, there's sort of like a rescaling that we have to do to operate at that level. And so there are in some ways things that you kind of have to suspend your disbelief a little bit in terms of how certain weapons are used and the ranges of things and how they're used. But what we get for that, I think, is a game that is so full of character and so full of life and can really draw you in and really kind of engage you emotionally, which is always, I think, what our goal is when it comes to these games.
Yeah, and I mean, it sounds like you're saying it's just a much more granular level where you you know, it's hopefully you're not going to get micro fatigue, which sometimes happens with these games that have a lot more going on the screen at one time.
That's actually something that we talk about, is the idea of micro and how many like actions per minute that you're completing. And something that's kind of a slogan that's set around the office is that for Company of Heroes, it shouldn't be about, you shouldn't win because you made more decisions. You should win because you made the right decisions, right? When you think about an RTS like StarCraft, not to say that you can't make wrong decisions right. in StarCraft, you definitely can, but it's more about like certainly the idea of APM and like the actions per minute mm-hmm. that you are completing in a game like StarCraft, which is like extremely intense in that sense. With Company of Heroes, you're not doing that constant clicking and constant, for instance, kiting. If I'm not sure if your listeners are familiar with that kind of aspect of the constant back and forth mm-hmm. and maneuver of each of your individual units. And it's more about, I need to secure this piece of cover because this piece of cover has lines of sight from it. And that's an important decision. Look, controlling locations. And if an enemy controls that location, how do you break them out of it? Do you flank them? Do you overwhelm them simply with having more units? Do you have to use abilities or like airstrikes or smoke or that sort of thing? It's what tools do I have and what is the tool I bring out to solve this problem? Rather than just overall the numbers of decisions that you're making.
Okay, yeah, I mean, and I think that sort of design philosophy appeals to me. I don't appreciate having to memorize a bunch of click orders in order to get the optimum build strategy for my base. That's not what I ever came to games for. But you actually mentioned the older Company of Heroes 1 and you mentioned Company of Heroes 2. How does Company of Heroes 3 iterate on the previous installments? What's the same? What's changed? And how much of that is... you've mentioned that you took a poll of players to see what theater they thought would be the most interesting. How much of that iterational change is based on that? And how much of it is just where you thought it would be an interesting place to take the game?
So, yeah, in terms of what we wanted to keep the same, certainly when you get into a mission, that core gameplay, if you're familiar with our past games, that core gameplay is something that you're going to be immediately familiar with. You know, Company of Heroes 1 or 2 or 3, you know, when you think about the basics, the absolute base level. What are you doing in a Company of Heroes game? You know, you're grabbing a squad of riflemen, you're putting them in cover to shoot at an enemy, you're throwing a grenade, like that sort of grab your infantry, get them in cover, move them to the next piece of cover, move them to the next piece of cover. That aspect of the gameplay, that's still there. That's the Company of Heroes people know. That's the Company of Heroes people love. That's there again. A lot of what we've added to and changed have been kind of the systems around that core gameplay that people love. So the dynamic campaign map that we've talked about, that grand strategy layer, that's something that's very new to this game. We had a mode called Ardennes Assault in Company of Heroes 2, which was about the Battle of the Bulge, and kind of had this aspect of I guess, if you haven't seen it, a kind of Risk-looking map where you've got the area broken up into different zones, and you're kind of choosing where to attack with the three companies that you have. But this is definitely an evolution of that, where it's much more in the vein of a grand strategy kind of 4X game, where you're thinking a lot about not just where you're moving your companies and where you're fighting, but the logistics of it. You know, are you in supply and out of supply? You know, where you're capturing things. So like that is definitely a huge new addition to our game. It, almost a campaign in and of itself, just that whole layer without the missions even is almost a whole new game. And then a lot of what we, when it comes to the companies themselves, in Company of Heroes 2, we had what were called commanders, and that was sort of the way that you modified the base faction. And there was a lot of them. I think, there's a few dozen, I think, commanders for at least a couple of the factions. That would have different, give you access to different abilities and different commanders. But it was five abilities and units that it would give you access to. And you would just kind of unlock them linearly. One thing that we wanted to do with this game was actually kind of go back a bit to Company of Heroes 1, where each faction... Sorry, I'm mixing up my nouns now. Sorry. Where each faction would have a doctrine that you could choose, and again, it would kind of give you a few of these choices. So if you went American armored, it would give you access to some boosts to your armored units and that sort of a thing. And we wanted to kind of go back to that and then expand upon it for Company of Heroes 3. So you have choice again when it comes to those. So not only do you, so when you pick your faction, say the Americans, and then you pick the company you want to use, let's say the Airborne, so the paratroopers, now within that you have another choice. So there's all kinds of, there's a bunch of abilities and units contained within that company, and there's a left-hand track and there's a right-hand track, and you can, you have to choose which track you want to upgrade first. And then even on those tracks, there are exclusive choices. So, you know, you can have this or that kind of a thing. You can have a recon run or you can have a smoke run from a plane, but okay, you can't have both. You have to choose which one you want to do. And so there's a lot of choice that you're making during the gameplay of what do I need right now? And then it kind of locks you into that choice. So it's like, okay, this is the tool I have and I have to make sure that I'm using that in a certain way. And so what we've found is that it gives players a ton of options for new and unique builds for each of their factions. You can play the American Army very, very, very differently depending on all of these choices that you make. And two people could be playing the Americans, but be playing almost different armies, even though some of the units will be the same, right? And so that's something that we really wanted to focus in on, was that player choice and adding that sort of strategic depth to how, not only what faction do I choose, but how do I modify that faction to make them a fighting force that works for exactly the kind of thing that I want to do right now.
Okay, great. Hey, so we've covered basically everything I wanted to get at specifically. Was there anything that you guys wanted to bring up or add?
Well, something that we're working towards that we're pretty excited about is that this game is going to be coming to consoles as well. Typically this has been a PC only franchise. But we're going to be bringing Company of Heroes 3 to console. We've been working with an external team to help port it over. And so I don't know. That's been really exciting for us because there's going to be a lot more people that can play the game,
For sure.
and there's been a lot of players actually who have spoken up and as pretty excited over that. They're like, oh, now I can sit on my couch and play this. Great, and that sort of a thing. Which actually kind of leads into one of the new features that we have, which is called we're calling Tactical Pause. And what it is in single player, you can actually pause the RTS game and issue orders to all of your units. And then when you unpause, your units will execute all of those orders. So there you can kind of stop the game and assess the tactical situation and then really decide how you're going to approach the problem. It kind of almost adds a pseudo turn-based aspect to excuse me, to the RTS layer, which is something that we're developing for PC regardless. It's one of the ways we wanted to try to help. Well, there's kind of two elements to it. One, we wanted to find a way to make RTS games a little bit more approachable to new players. RTS games do have a pretty steep learning curve sometimes, and
Yeah, they
so
can.
when it comes to that single player, we wanted to give players, the option to, okay, stop this. Think about the strategy. Think about how the units relate to each other, and give them a moment to really kind of understand what the rock, paper, scissors, plus relationships of our units are to each other. Although I've been playing Company of Heroes since Company of Heroes 1, and honestly, I use Tactical Pause a lot too. So,
Yeah, well, I mean, it's something that's kind of existed in other, they call them pausable real-time strategy games for a long time. It's just, it hasn't been a part of the, I guess, standard RTS genre for whatever reason.
Yeah, and so that's something that we've added to this, which should help out a lot on console as well. And so that's all of that is something that we're pretty excited about coming out here.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.